Hello, hello, hello. This is Jan Desper-Peters, and I am the host of BTST's podcast, Meeting You Where You Are. Today, we are going to talk about a very important issue, not just because it's 2020, but it's always an important issue, and that is voting. I know that people have different opinions about it. Some people don't engage in it at all. But if I can do one thing, and if I know some of you know me, some of you may not, if you can do one thing, whether it be for me or for yourself, primarily for yourself, and that is in November, we need to get out there and V-O-T-E, vote. And so we have a candidate today for Baltimore City's mayor, and we're going to ask him a lot of questions about his experience being a Baltimore native, about why he's running, and the importance of everyone being engaged in the political process. So before I do that, I want to introduce my co-host, Chris Simon. Chris is the CEO of BTST Services. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Jan, how are you?
I'm good.
I feel like I haven't seen you forever.
I know, I know. I think it's because maybe you've been traveling and then some other things.
Yeah. But this is a unique, this is a podcast I'm excited about. We got my brother on here. And the thing about Meeting You Where You Are podcast, it's about us, you know, shining light on things that are happening in our communities and how it ties into mental health, or just the impact that these things, initiatives, or whatever it is, the focus of our podcast are having today. And I feel like the guy here today has, outside of what he's doing now, what he has done already, he could really just not do anything else and have made a, has, would have already done enough for the city. But for somebody like him, that enough is still not enough. You know, he has a huge heart. Somebody that has always been genuine. If I call and I say, hey, I need something, or hey, can you do something, he's like, all right, bet, I'm there. I met this brother through a mutual friend of ours. I really had to think about how I met, how we met, because we interact, you know, semi often, but social media now is like, you feel like you see somebody every day.
Exactly,
now, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
To the point that you almost take it for granted, and you can't take it for granted, because you never know when the next time you see somebody is, you know?
That's,
and I know,
right,
he was just sharing a story with me off camera about that. But my guy, Stokey Carmichael, we met through a friend of ours, Aaron Maven.
Okay.
They...
And Aaron and I have a connection as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aaron's a great guy. And I think Stokey was hosting something at Walbrook. White Lot. And I just stopped through to show some support to Aaron, and then me and Stokey met then. Then I met him during like the summertime series that they were having with Duse and stuff like that. And then we just, we went and hung out one day, which I'll get more into. But yeah, he's always been a great guy. So without me talking it to death, because everybody didn't call, listen, tune in to hear me, my guy Stokey, what's up, brother?
My guy, how you feel?
Thanks I'm for good, man. Thank you for coming.
You're a natural, man. I'm proud of you, man. Let me know how much I owe you, because you killed that bio. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And thank you, too, for having me.
Yeah, we are very, very excited to have you here.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I really had not known about you or about your story until Chris presented it to me, because we were working on a Taraji P. Henson conference.
Right.
And when we were curating speakers, Chris suggested that you be on the panel for the criminal justice piece. So
Thank you.
I'm glad to meet you in person.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Like Chris said, he's a very genuine person. I would be disingenuous if I didn't tell you I was happy to have him as one of my friends. Like you said, I don't see him every single day, but if he ever called me, whenever he called me, I'm going to answer. And I'm going to do my best to always be there for him. But there's not that many Chris's around, so I'll take, you know, a great deal of pride, you know, to have those type of friends in my life. So that's why I'm always going to be on deck for Chris.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Jan was the one that curated all the entire panel. So we were thinking about, like, how we can, you know, have a balance. We got the legislators and stuff like that. And I was like, we need somebody with real life experience that can also speak about criminal justice, that was a part of the criminal justice system and now is advocating for it and has relationships where they're doing even more major work, but we'll get to that later. But I kind of want to start, I'll start there as with the criminal justice system. But you have a unique background, right?
Correct.
Well, not unique for Baltimore, but unique for the position that you're running for now. And I'll save all the mayoral stuff till later. But you have a unique background in that a lot of people that, this may be funny, but a lot of people that are running for mayor haven't been charged for a crime yet.
Right. You know, some of them have.
You know, I'll pass.
Some of them have, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, so running out. I mean, but you have a different background and growing up in Baltimore. Speaks to everyone about, you know, your life growing up and, you know, how your story maturated from there.
Well, first, I just want to say something. She said November is voting, right?
It's actually April.
And I want to make sure those who intend to be a part of this process know that early voting is the 16th of April to the 23rd, and the actual primary is the 28th. So I just want to let your viewers know that. But, I mean, I was a regular kid growing up in a one-parent household in the inner city of Baltimore, Westside, Whitelock, Reservoir Hill. And, you know, I want to blame it on my dad or, you know, my mom for her drug addiction or lack of engagement, but I made some poor decisions, you know. And I was just telling a friend a few minutes ago before I got here, because I had to shed a tear about an experience that you talked about yesterday. Like, as a man, I feel responsible for some of the things I see today. And then the other people who sort of told me, well, forgiveness may take a different route, right? But for me, knowing that these young men that grew up in Baltimore City who want a better life and want an easy way out, they follow trends and they do things that most of us did as a young adult or a child, adolescent, however you classify us. But, you know, my father wasn't in my life, but before he left, he did so much damage. He was the one who actually introduced me to selling drugs at 10 years old. And I'll never forget that moment because I was so happy to see him. But the trauma and the impact he left for me caused me to be the person I was when I was growing up, you know. So
you're talking about somebody that got killed the other day. Yesterday, 13-year-old.
Well, it happened over the weekend.
Over the weekend.
Right.
But you're saying you feel personal responsibility for that?
Absolutely.
As if the behavior you were engaging in at that point had a trickle-down effect to them?
Yeah, well, you know, in life, to me, you know, there's only two behaviors, taught and learned. And a lot of things that we see today is predicated on something that happened prior to the existence of what's going on. So, again, you know, there wouldn't be a LeBron if there wasn't a Michael Jordan. There wouldn't be a Michael Jordan or if there wasn't a Dr. J. There wouldn't be a Dr. J if there wasn't a Bill Russell. So growing up in Baltimore, for some reason, we had lack of resources. Well, I know the reason why, but for the reasons of having lack of resources and you know, living in a fair amount of I'm going to say, because poverty has affected a lot of inner city communities. But I'm saying is that some of us who was, when you say middle class or lower class, to me, they write symbolic. So I'm saying some of us who grew up in a middle class family with a single parent made choices based on scarce resources. And when you grow up, you want to be like something or someone. So my analogy to Michael Jordan in basketball is some kids wanted to be like Scarface in the inner city of Baltimore to escape the conditions that they face. I was one of those kids. Unfortunately, I became good at it. And when you become good at something, you have people who want to follow you and be just like you. Now, if I would have failed, started using drugs, back and forth to prison, this conversation would be moot. But that's not my story. Mm-hmm. So I was successful at it, and I affected the whole community with that behavior. And not only did I traumatize my family, but I traumatized young kids that grew up behind me who wanted to perpetuate that same behavior. So now what you see in the city today is the effect of some of those decisions I made. Although it might not have been him directly, it come from somewhere, you know.
I see where you're going there. Mm-hmm. So
it's
you
like
said
a domino effect.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I see that you said, and I saw this on the Breakfast Club. That was a great interview. Thank I texted you and was just like, yo, that was a good interview. Actually, I had texted you about something else, and then I realized you were on there. I was like, oh, crap. But you spoke about that, like you said, your dad started you selling drugs at 10 years old.
He didn't start me. He introduced me.
How did that go?
Because you know, like, my father never was in my life. But I was always so happy to see him. I knew who he was. And whenever he would show up, I would be so excited. You talking about a 10-year-old kid. And I remember one day I was in an arcade on the corner playing arcade games, and he popped up with a book bag, and he asked me to have a seat on the step. And I remember, like, just sitting down, being very, you know, humble, you know. And I didn't want to be rebellious because my friends thought I was on some type of timeout or something. You got to sit down and don't move. You might be on timeout or punishment. Mm-hmm. So I sat there for about 5-10 minutes. He came back, gave me a brown paper bag and with instructions. If I send somebody to you, you give them one. And I said, okay, cool. And at the time, I knew it wasn't normal, but I didn't know exactly what it was because back then, people would sell all type of things, you know, to people. And probably for like the next hour or two, he probably sold 200 to 300 bags. And back then, I realized now that the price of drugs was much higher than it was now. So you're talking about $50 to $75 per bag. Right. So he probably made anywhere about 15. I don't know. I think he might have made $50,000. I don't know. But I know he left me with $20. And no, that's the same thing, you know, Charlamagne did, right?
By
right.
10 years old, you were like $20.
Yeah, that was Christmas in June. Right. I mean, you know, because I could play games all day long. I could buy my friends candy. I could play arcade games. So all those things really, to me, resonated with success, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, or a happy ending, you know. And then I just remember having a conversation with my mom after he left, you know, and she was like livid, you know, because she didn't understand exactly why he did what he did, you know. And
she knew what
happened because I told her, I said,
she knew you deserved more money than that.
No, she knew
that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
But she knew that too, right? She's like, where the rest of the money at, right?
Right.
Like, you know, but then like, but it's ironic because most of my friends, you know, back then had two parents in the household, you know, and, or their father was in their life, even if they lived together, but he wasn't in my life. My mother had remarried. My stepfather had went to prison at that time, so really it was just me, my mom, and my sister, you know. But he was the one who introduced me to that.
Gotcha. So how did that wind up for him? Did he wind up going to prison as well? The reason why I ask, because I see you in Instagram videos with, you say it's your dad. Is that?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Because I was like, yo, it's good that he reestablished the relationship with his father.
No,
these funny videos that they do on Instagram.
See, what happened was a lot of people don't understand what the Stokely Project consists of. Like, you know, I manage and consult, and I do marketing for different companies and organizations. And one day, I had the cookout you talk about.
Yeah.
It had two successful days, and the third day it rained. So we was out back trying to figure out what to do with the food. So we said, we're going to eat it ourselves, right? So he showed up and we just started joking. And when nowadays, the first thing you do, you pull your phone out, right? Mm-hmm. So I put my phone out and I just recorded him because he's been that way my entire life. I've known him my entire life. He's been funny the same way.
This is not your father, though?
Never.
Okay.
No. That's right. My guy. So he's not going to be my father. But so I just remember recording that video. And then one day I was at work, just bored. And I had the video on my phone for like a year. And I just posted it. Everybody was like, who's that? Who's that? So after a while, I realized that I couldn't keep putting all that content on my page. So he started his own page and, you know, had a better understanding of what his future looked like if, in fact, he tapped into, you know, the comedian market. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just wanted to be a resource and use my, you know, my relationship to help him get there, you know. And it paid off for him. Unfortunately, some things in my life stopped me from being engaged the way I wanted to because, I mean, I didn't really enjoy having fun. That's me all day long. Like, people understand, like, I could care less about money, fame, you know, fortune. I just want to have fun, be happy, you know, and be around my real friends, you know. And I miss that because that's what I like to do. But unfortunately, you know, everybody don't understand that. So I had to withdraw from that for a time. But, you know, hopefully, you know, it's forever. But if not, we'd probably be back, you know, again in April or something.
What I found from being around you one day, I think we were just at the Shoe City office, and my team was doing some video work for Scola, right?
Right.
And I'm gonna get into Scola, but you are a very family oriented person, and it wasn't surprising to me, but it was just like to see like the different kids and your sons and stuff like that, and seeing how they come and look up at you and look at you for respect and guidance and stuff like that. Speak about why that's important to you, and do you feel like that came because of the way you grew up or the lack thereof?
90% of the reason why, you know, I'm the father I am today because of the father I didn't have. And I never wanted to perpetuate that ignorance and let it, you know, some type of way affect my family, you know, my kids. So me and my kids are very tight, you know. I mean, they like my best friends and vice versa. And then when you look at their friends or their peers, you know, who experience some of the same things I experienced, I want to make sure that their hardships don't end up, you know, penalizing them for the rest of their life like mine could have. So, I love my kids, you know, and not having my mom and not having a father, they became all I needed, you know, at some point. You know, not married, but my kids is my life. So we will always remain tight, you know. We embrace each other, you know, no matter what the difficulties are in life or hardships, you know. There has never been a time where you know, I don't want to be there for my child, you know, regardless of which one it is. But that's the reason why we so tight, because of the relationship I wanted to make sure we formed due to me not having a father.
Yeah, and I can empathize with you with that, because, like, I don't know my real dad. You know what I'm saying? I have a stepfather who's wonderful, you know. But it's like, you know, with my kids, I want to make sure that I always be, I won't ever not be there for somebody. Like, I had years where he wasn't there, where nobody was there.
Right.
So I always want to make sure that my kids never experience that. Speaking of, with one of you, with you, you have a kid that's pretty popular. And we actually got a record deal, YB Escola.
Right.
Actually got a record deal with Meek Mill and Dream Chasers and stuff like that. How did that whole situation come about?
Through relationships. I mean, he had talent. A few years prior to him even me getting involved, I never took it serious because I didn't think that my son was a rapper. I mean, I never remember him making music, making beats, or doing anything. And I guess he was natural and became good at it. And then me having a relationship with Meek Mills and, you know, and Dream Chasers, once they found out that was my son, they was like, man, let me help him. And at the time, I wasn't even into music. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. You know, we all under the same umbrella. You know, my son from Baltimore. Baltimore doesn't really have a premium music platform. So why not, you know, give him an opportunity to bridge, you know, a relationship with Meek, and they move forward. And that's kind of what happened. But then, unfortunately, Meek caught a situation, which put Scola's career on hold because Meek was gone. And then at the end of the day, like, no one could do for Scola what Meek wanted to do with Meek not being there. And then when Meek came home, Scola was gone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I want to say this too, if I forget, everything happened for a reason. I think you turned out great. I think you turned out great. And I think sometimes if we have enablers in our life, sometimes a parent could help or could hurt. You know, I know a lot of guys that had both parents and they still ain't end up doing anything. And sometimes motivating, it could be a motivating factor in us to do more because of what's missing.
So when you have that void, you work harder to fill it and to thrive from it. You mentioned something. Jan, I know you want to get in real fast.
I do.
I have one. I want to ask a follow-up question because
Otherwise,
Stokey said this.
I might as well sit over there.
No. This is good. Feel free to get in whenever. I'll just ask this one in and then. You mentioned that Baltimore doesn't really have that music platform like that. And I'm curious to figure out why do you think that is, because of, like, we had Lil Scooter, and then he was murdered. Right. And then you have, like, Scola, who was gaining a lot of notoriety, and it was incarceration. It's hard for people to make it from Baltimore, not just in my opinion, just from my assessment, because of the life that surrounds Baltimore that makes it hard. One, we have a unique sound. And then after you come to accept the unique sound, you got to get past all the other variables that happen in our lives. Is that kind of what you see from being in the music industry and from the street?
No, not at all. That's talent everywhere. No, not only in Baltimore, as you see Atlanta, New York, L.A., Miami. African-Americans are the most talented people God ever created. And I don't think there's nothing we can do. Unfortunately, living in Baltimore, there is a stigma that affects even the hopeful, where their lack of support. And regardless of your talent, if you don't have a premium platform that people in your hometown are willing to invest in, you know, you will see a disconnect. And we don't have any major labels that were formed in Baltimore to recognize the talent. So that means somebody got to make a phone call, or somebody got to call somebody, you know, I mean, or see somebody somewhere, whether it be freestyle or whatever it may be, you know. But fortunately enough, you know, there are some of us in Baltimore who could have, you know, who doing the best they could then. But there's so many people in Baltimore, man, I can hold accountable, but I ain't gonna do that, because they know a lot of people, and sometimes it's not about what you know, it's who you know, right? I mean, there's no way in the world I can be into boxing, right, and not come back and get boxes out of Baltimore. There's no way in the world I can do that. And Baltimore shouldn't allow that. But we have gave people passes that have had music platforms that may have done just enough, but they didn't do what they should have done to really save a generation of artists who was hopeful to make it out. And again, statistically, you know, over the last 5 years, you know, just to be right honest with you, and nothing to do with politics because I studied numbers, but in 2014, 211 people were murdered. In 2015, 344 people were murdered. 2016, 319 people were murdered. 2017, 343 people were murdered. 2018, 310 people were murdered. Last year, we had 348 people murdered. 87.4% of people that was murdered had music in their bio or their obituary. So therefore, there's no excuse for why we shouldn't have been investing in some of these kids 5 years ago with some type of music platform. And I'm not saying that's going to be the end all be all, but it could be a gateway to some other things in their life, because you know, you're in the, you know, mental health profession. Some guys don't talk to other guys.
That's right.
But they talk through their music.
Yeah.
So if you gotta find a way to channel into that and bring something out, then so be it. But it's worthy of investing. And that's why I made some decisions not that long ago with relationships. So we don't have enough relationships in Baltimore to bridge the divide.
I was, thank you, Mr.
See, you're caught up, in the conversation.
I got caught up in the conversation and I forgot, and I didn't see the pitch coming back to me.
You got it.
Okay, thank you, appreciate that. I was just thinking about, I'm not from Baltimore, but I've worked in Baltimore for over 25 years. And
you're from Baltimore?
I'm from Baltimore, right. Yeah. And when people kind of think I'm from Baltimore if they don't know me as, you know, when I was younger and growing up.
Tell us where you're from.
I'm from Capitol Heights.
Well, that's
I know. It's
I thought you were say Alabama.
No. I'm still from Maryland, and so people have this perception of Baltimore, like you were talking about, just because of what they've heard, not really what they've experienced or what they've seen on The Wire or The Corner or one of those kind of shows. And Chris and I actually went to a community event recently, and there were over 20, maybe more, maybe double that amount, community organizations there. And we were all making these pitches for our community programs, because BTST also has a nonprofit, BTST Cares. And me and Chris were like, just, wow, listen to that program. Yeah. We were like, I was like, Chris, if we had money, we could fund some of these programs. Yeah. You know, he was all in, because that's the kind of person he is.
Yes.
As a person that is running for mayor, can you just share with the listeners some of the programs that you see in Baltimore that are positive and working?
There's a lot of organizations that are not properly funded that I think could use some steroid support in terms of making sure that their program is properly monetized and supported to give these kids the substantial I give him some real help, like Challenge of Change, Uncle T. Like, he deals with inner city at-risk youth on Monument Street every single day out of his pocket. He might have got a Band-Aid one point in time or another, but his program needs stitches. Mm-hmm. So that means that if we can properly fund his program with the necessary resources and make sure that, you know, he's equipped, you know, with the information, the knowledge, and ready to be technology to move forward, he can save more lives. There are a lot of other programs that are run through the city. But, you know, the ones I'm concerned about are grassroots, you know, the ones that people do on their own. And there are not enough of those people because of resources and funds, you know. There are people who are in a position of power who have allocated resources to individuals who don't have a clue on how to fix what we see in Baltimore. And everybody doesn't have to have a problem. But I'm wanting to tell you that if you focus on those that don't have a problem, then to me you're misusing these funds, because the ones that need help should be the ones that receive, you know, the benefits, and that's not happening. So I'm not aware of a lot of different programs that are run individually, you know, without having, you know, I guess, government or city assistance, you know. But I do know that the one I spoke of is pretty much the one I work with. And there's a lot of other young entrepreneur programs that I can't think of the top of my head. I know the people's names, like, you know, Kelly, and I don't know her program and things like that, but it's a lot of, you know, people like Aaron Maben, he spoke of. They got a lot of people that want to do certain things. Erica also. There's so many different people I know who I have.
You know a lot of people. Like, you know, Mark does the real estate development and teaches people through.
Well, but I thought she was talking about, like,
yeah, programs. Like, yeah.
Direct.
Yeah.
Programs dealing directly with kids at risk.
I mean, my point was not really to put you on the spot or anything like that. It was just really to let people know that we do have good people who care about Baltimore.
Right. There's a lot of people.
People who work hard every day. Like you said, the gentleman you mentioned that use his own resources. People do that every day. And so I just want to make sure that people see another side of Baltimore. And so I'm assuming that's why you're running for mayor as well.
But go ahead.
Okay, are we ready to transition to the mayor part?
I got to let them build to.
Okay, all right. Okay, we're not ready to make that transition.
Yeah, but I want to, because I feel like if we go right to mayor, it's not going to give a true reflection of the man that's running for mayor. Okay. So I want to just come back for that just for a second, mm-hmm. right? So we were talking about incarceration, and you were locked up. You speak about it a lot, how that experience changed your life. How much time did you get, and what did being incarcerated do for you? And then I'm going to get into some of the relationships that you established right. while in there.
I received 15 years for conspiracy to distribute and possess what they consider legal substance, because there's multiple drugs involved. And I did like 12 years. But I don't know if I misspoke, but prison didn't do anything for me. Like, prison wasn't the reason why I came home and started atonement or changed my perspective. It was the time away from my family that did that. So if I was in Iraq or Afghanistan and the things going on in my family now would still happen, I would still change my thinking. Because that means I would have to allocate more resources or more time in my life to make sure that I repair the damage I caused by leaving, right? So unfortunately, I couldn't come home. So that's a big difference between the Army and in prison, you know. And prison affects you, your family in ways where the armed service don't, because there's more hardships. I'm just saying being away from the problem allowed me the time to think about myself and what I could do to better myself, you know. I mean, in prison, it house people, you know. I mean, they have programs there called ACE course, adult continuing education, but they teach you to get a certificate, but it's not like you actually learning anything in prison. So for me, it was more like being away from my family, knowing that I had done to them what was done to me. And that affected me more than anything else. So I don't wish that on anyone.
Yeah, well, my boy Frank just came home from 12 years in prison and is running a homeless shelter now. Is doing phenomenal things with that. So I love to see when people are coming home and doing great stuff. You came home and started doing some great stuff. But you also, hold on before I go there, you met, so Jane, I don't know if you know this through your research, through your interns, because Jan just learned how to do Insta Story the other day.
Right, right, right. So, yeah. I was practicing so she's,
just now. Okay. So she's not the most up to date on the call, savvy and stuff like with certain things like that. But Stokey,
I do have a lot of other skills.
Yeah. Okay. She's phenomenal. Jay used to run the whole Black Mental Health Alliance and everything. Like,
I believe in you.
She's connected. Well, you guys should really talk after this, because
we will.
Jan has a whole set of resources as well. But when he was locked up, his roommate was Emery Jones. Do you know Emery Jones is?
Yes. I listened to the Breakfast Club interview too.
Oh, okay.
I did my research.
Okay, which is Jay-Z's best friend. And what was that experience like, and how did that come about for people that didn't hear it on there? Because you guys have a very, very organic relationship. It's not like a capitalistic one. It's not like one-sided. I've seen you do for him, and I've seen him do for you. How did that whole situation come about?
You know, it's funny because neither one of us don't. Well, his mother didn't have a son. My mother didn't have a son. His mother had one daughter. My mother had one daughter. So we brothers. Although whatever our father did had more kids, that's fine. But our mothers never have a child. And that's my brother. Like, you know, we partners in a whole lot of business endeavors, but that's my guy. And we met, you know, both of us. It was very unusual because for most men who go to prison, because, you know, it's a difference, you know, between a male and a man. There's a difference. You know, God make you a male. You got to become a man through your experiences. So most men know what I'm talking about. And a lot of males go to prison, but they don't be men. And I'm not talking about, you know, being homophobic or I'm saying just being a man, standing up for what you do, being accountable and so forth and so on. So I had a big case in Baltimore, and I know they didn't have any evidence, and rumor was that they were trying to get somebody in my cell to get me to talk about some of the things I'd done because they didn't have no evidence. Nobody would cooperate with them, you know, it was all circumstantial. So I didn't want no cellies. So I told the staff, you know, the CEO, I don't want no Sally here, you know, or I'm going, you know, in the hole. I don't want no Sally. Like I said, man, I'm trying to study my case, whatever. So I said, put them somewhere else. It was different cells that were open. So one day I'm laying down, I think it was like a Friday night, and I know it wasn't count time, you know, and I'm listening to music, got my headphones on, and I'm zoned out in the cell open. I'm like, what the hell going on? And I see somebody like Stokey, I know, man, we talk about it later. I said, talk about what later? Yeah, I said, man, come on. So when I look at Emery from his appearance, he don't look like no drug dealer. You know, he didn't look like nobody that I thought, you know, was somebody, you know, credible at that point, right? You know, and he had, you know, glasses on, you know what I'm saying? And I think he's one of the counties, and whenever it's time you go to court, they bring you in the city. So I'm like, let me just go ahead and be humble because I don't want no trouble. So I had my commissary on the top bunk and all my clothes folded up real neat, sanitary, so the mice wouldn't get them. So now I got to try to figure out, put my food back in a trash bag hanging over top of the sink, you know, because, you know, now you got a celly. And we came in, he waited, you know, I saw fold my bunk back, let him go, put his glasses on the sink, laid down, didn't say a word. So I'm like, where you from, man? Like, you know, I'm from down the shore. I said, the shore? I ain't know the feds even was locking people up down the shore. I'm like, the shore? He's like, yeah, the shore. I'm like, you know, but Emory never said anything about Jay-Z, never said anything about nobody. He just like, I'm down in Maine, you know. I said, you go send us that? He said, nah. I said, you play good? He said, nah, I'm going to do it next month, though. So what you looking at? He said, that, we said we was called slices. Years. He said, what you facing? He said, about 15 slices. I said, 15 months? He said, nah, 15 years. I set up, I'm like, hey, what's your name again? And what you do? He's like, you know. And one day, like a few days later, you know, back then, that's when V103 was famous for letting superstars come on the radio and shout people out.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, Jay-Z came to town, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to give a shout out to my man, Emory Jones, on T-Section, you know what I'm saying?
That's like, you.
That's you. He like, yeah, man. I said, huh? I said, you know, and Jay-Z at that time was, I don't say he was as popular as Meek Mill is now, but, you know, he was like one of those upcoming rappers that had a few albums out that was kind of successful at that time. Because music back then wasn't as, you know, it wasn't as big as it
is
now.
Yeah, it wasn't diverse, yeah.
So then Emory got these rocker wear clothes in. Now, I go on visits every week. Emory wasn't getting no visits. He didn't want no visits. So he was getting clothes, but he didn't want to wear. I'm like, let me get that sweatsuit. I give you a brand new polo sweatsuit. I had two of the same color. And he's like, man, I don't care. You can have it. I ain't going no visits. I ain't have it. So I was in. I didn't know Rockaway had clothes. You know, they came out after I came in. Because at that time, I think I was out like 9, 10 months, you know. And we just formed a real bond, man, you know, and we stayed in contact. But it's so funny because we never end up doing time together. He went to Fort Dix, I went to Pennsylvania. I mean, he went to New Jersey, I went to Pennsylvania. And we always stayed in contact through third party. So if somebody was coming from where he from, we would send love. And then we came home around the same time, though. But we remember those hardships in itself together. And, you know, we start sharing his mother. His mother's like my mother. She called me more than she called him. His kids call me like my kids call him aunt. His kids call me aunt. Like, we have a bond. And, you know, of course, the rest is history in terms of introducing me to Jay and the rest of the people, right? You know, but that was something that just happened because it wasn't nothing that I wanted to happen. It just happened, you know. And then they took a liking to me. I took a liking to them. We started doing business together, and then the rest is history. But we met at a time in our life where both of us was dismayed about the time we were facing, you know, and the outcome. It wasn't pretty when you know you're going to be gone a decade or more, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
you don't have no choice.
So now, fast forward 15 years, or 12 years, right? I know that's hard to do. You say years. Fast forward.
You mean back then or now?
Fast forward from the time when you went into when you came out.
20 years.
You did 20?
That was 20 years ago. You mean?
No, from your entry date to you got okay. You did 20
came
years,
out, right.
Fast forward to then, and you get out.
Right.
And then you start the Stokey Project.
Right.
And then you develop relationships with, like, Shoe City.
Right.
And we know Greg right. through Shoe City, which is my guy as
Love
well.
Greg. Right.
Yeah, and it does great stuff. So you start doing a lot of their community work and stuff like that. So speak about the Stokey Project, the work you guys did in the community, period, and then the relationships with Shoe City and how you helped do tremendous amount of give back and stuff like that.
Well, before I met Greg, I had ran into Nikel, which is my boss, at a sneaker fest in Willon, and we was on Facebook together, but this is roughly 2013-14, and I would always be traveling and stuff, you know, so she's like, you never home. But when she inboxed me about something in particular, I thought she was a guy because her name, I thought it was Neil instead of, you know, Nikel, you know, and like, oh, that's my guy. What's this? I'm not a guy, I'm a girl. And then so she asked me what I was doing. I said, I do a little marketing for Duce. I mean, Rock Nation, because Duce was just coming out, and we was helping push the brand. She said, we need somebody marketing to do some stuff for us. And I said, well, where you work at? She said, Shoe City. So she set up a meeting with me and Greg, and at the time, the CCO of the company. And we talked about what that would look like working for them, you know. And I said, well, if I come, I got to bring Emory with me, because that's one of the guys I know that can help, you know, with the marketing department. And we came in and we did our best to turn the company around, not economically, just culturally, you know what I'm saying, finding ways to invest into the communities, get back where there's needs, that where our needs can be met, you know, philanthropy, you name it, and Shoe City was on deck, you know. So they partnered with the Stokie Project in terms of their marketing department. I brought Emery in. I mean, we done some wonderful things there, you know what I'm saying? And I'm currently still working there, but that's family. It's not even like work. It's family because, yeah. I mean, what Greg means to me as a person. But, you know, and I would honestly, I wouldn't do that for no one else because it's personal, you know. And it's personal to him to get back and help people. You don't find that many people that's selfless, you know what I'm saying, that really want to help other people, you know. And that's a family-owned business, not incorporated or anything like that. So he could have definitely said no a lot of times.
But specifically speak about some of the things, because I know some, but I want the listeners to know some. Like, I remember, like, I would call and say, hey, we got the big gift back. Can we get, I need some gift cards. Greg's like, call Stokie. Stokie, I ask for 10, I get 20. $200 gift, $100 or $200 gift cards, easy. I know that, like, back to school, when the kids didn't have heat at that one school or something, you guys did something, right?
Right.
Or, like, something happened at Douglas. I can't remember, but you guys
Well, me being boots on the ground and having a lot of resources and relationship with community leaders and, you know, activists and so forth, they always call me when there's a particularized need that need to be addressed. And me being in the marketing department, I know who our partners are and what makes sense. So we not only feed the homeless, get back school drives or summer events, we do it all. Like, we traveled to Flint, Michigan and gave like damn near 55,000 pounds of water.
Wow.
To the hurricane victims in Houston. Like, you know, it's not a stone we didn't overturn.
And those
if we
aren't
could.
Necessarily places that you have
stores. No, we don't have stores in those places. Mm-hmm. You know? And they're just based on relationships, you know what I'm saying? And so it's amazing the things that have happened with the relationships that were created, you know, from that company. But if it was not for the community initiatives, you know, it wouldn't even be probably a job for me, mm-hmm. because it has to incorporate some type of give back.
Right.
You know, and he made it easy for me because his heart was in the right place, you know what I'm saying? And there's not too many people who really are selfless in that position, you know. I mean, they let people speak for them, you know, and sometimes it's ineffective, you know. For him, it was always put the people first. They patronize us. We want to get back when we can. And every single year for the last 10 years, I've been doing something in my community, free food, free clothes, free haircuts, and so forth, you know. And he been a part of that.
You guys had the free haircuts at the back end on Whitelock.
Yeah, free haircuts back to school. I mean, that's something that we always try to give kids a different experience, you know what I'm saying? And one of the ways to do that is partner with people who really wanted to be engaged, and that opportunity came from Adidas. They wanted to get free haircuts. They partnered with us, and it's easy when people know that you already know what the needs are. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. Though when New Balance want to get shoes, where they come to us, or not Nike, but you know, Timberland or you know, you know, Puma, a lot of those other you know, companies, you know, they come to us because they know we know what the needs are.
Gotcha. So my last question before I let Jan take the mayoral stuff and run with it is, because I'm building this understanding of the person that is running for this job.
Yep.
You not only do you do work in the community, you give back, you work at, you do the thing at Shoe City, you also are a manager of an artist that is grown and gaining a lot of notoriety,
right?
And because I would see you out in LA and just everything, you had this guy that you're managing. How is that working out, and how did that come about?
You talk about Lil Skies, you know.
Yeah.
I love him. That he's a great person before he's an artist. And what happened was he seen what I was doing with Skola. And my coworker's son introduced me to Skies. And at the time, I wasn't really into music the way I wanted to be because, again, what you said earlier, Baltimore didn't have any major platforms. And I wasn't the type of person to get on the phone and call Jay-Z. Like, man, I got a guy, help me. I wanted to earn my keep. And so I put some plays together. I told him we had to do these things, you know, in order for his career to be successful, he had to trust me. And, you know, when the time was right, we would take the right opportunity, you know. And I mean, you know, he changed my life, I mean, in so many different ways, you know. I remember in December 17, you know, roughly 3 years ago, we did a tour with Uzi, and it was a Christmas holiday tour. And
he's talking about the artist, by the way, y'all.
Yeah, Lil Uzi Vert. And you know, we had the opportunity to open for him, you know, and like, I just wanted him to get the experience because I already knew that he was going to blow. He's a great entertainer. He's a great person. He had a lot of talent. He just needed to have the right platform. And after we did our deal, you know, we was asked to open up for Uzi Vert, and you know, we had six shows, one in D.C., two in New York, two in Boston, and one in Philly. And I just remember they gave us like $6,000 like for the whole tour. And I'm like, that's not enough money to pay for the bus and the hotel, nothing. But we wanted the experience, you know. And I remember just telling him, man, be patient. But if I can go back a little further, before we even got the deal, we was in New York, and a company I don't want to name, you know, they had set a meeting up for us. And Skiles was in New York on a skateboard with no phone service. Just, he only used his phone when he had Wi-Fi. And I was coming from Baltimore. It was pouring down raining, and I was explaining to him, like, listen, we got to meet this certain station, label. They want to talk to us, you know, be on time. He's like, okay, cool. But he was lost because, you know, he had no car. He had a skateboard, and, you know, he didn't have no service unless he got in Wi-Fi so he can text back and forth. And the guy gave us, like, an hour window, you know, and Skiles still had, like, 20 minutes before the meeting was over to get there. I was there waiting for Skiles. So the guy counts the meeting like 20 minutes prior to the meeting being over. I went downstairs, first person I see is Skiles, soaking wet on the skateboard. And I told him the meeting was canceled. He just was living, you know. And I didn't want to argue with him because, you know, I understand what he was going through. He's talking about an 18-year-old child at that time. Like, that was the biggest opportunity of his life, you know. But he ended up getting him some money. He ended up staying in New York doing a video and so forth. And, you know, he was still hopeful. On my way back home, I get a call from somebody I knew in L.A. wanted me to fly out the following week to see what, you know, we could do. And we end up doing a big deal. But, you know, again, I go back for the $6,000 from that show. You know, I mean, God good, right? So, I mean, you talking about $6,000 for a tour, he get anywhere between $75 to $100 a show now. So I'm saying, yeah. Like, so money, you know, is like how things happen. It's supposed to happen. You've been patient. So he seen what I was doing with Scola. He wanted to get involved. And, you know, and I always told him, Scola, my son, that's my best friend. But I knew this guy was going to be bigger because the type of artist he was and the type of music he was into. And that demographic, that genre of music I knew, you know. Because, you know, it's all about who supports you, you know what I'm saying? And for some reason, people go to Scola shows to look good. They go to Sky shows to feel good.
Have fun, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
so you said that these things shape you and they build you to who you are. So you had Stokey. Brought up in a single parent household, was engaged into the drug game, wound up serving time, came home, started the Stokey Project, giving back through Shoe City, has a
I was giving back before Shoe City.
Then you have the artist that you're managing that has a very promising career.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you have this brilliant idea to say, I'm going to run for mayor. I know I could make millions doing this, and I'm really excited about doing that. And I see my trajectory. I see it. I see how it all comes together there. However, there's an imminent need at home, and I just can't shake it. Talk about when that hit you, that day when that hit you.
I might just use that. That's exactly what happened.
Yo,
that's
good. Honestly, put me on a campaign, man.
I'm saying
put me on a campaign.
No, because a lot of people don't understand, like, I mean, and I don't like to talk about money because some people, it go over their head. But he just said it like, I mean, I was telling the ladies earlier, this is the most successful, happiest, healthiest I've ever been in my entire life. Mm. I've never been sick, I've been saying, but like, when I mean healthy, mentally healthy, exactly. About, you know. And it wasn't a hard decision because I never thought I would be a millionaire. I never even thought about what that felt like. And now it's like, you know, there's still no money when your friends broke and your city poor. So I don't even know how to take advantage of those opportunities anymore because it's like, it's nothing, right? So one day I went to court with a friend of mine and my son goes to Roland Park and I'm like, okay, let me stop in and see this little kid. You know, he's 6 years old. I know, on my way back. So I stop and see him. He on timeout and it's all dark in there. I'm like, well, what happened? And he real somber. He don't want to tell me because he always in trouble, right? I'm like, man, what you do now? Hey, I was talking. I said, talk up. I said, man, listen, you can't go to L.A. with me. Because I had already packed my stuff up. I gave all my friends away. I was gone. This was in, my lease is up March 22nd. This was maybe April the 16th or something like that. Because I know it was before Emery's birthday. Because I was about there in L.A. to celebrate his birthday with him. Gave everything away. So I'm talking to my son, he's like, but dad, what's wrong with Baltimore? Why you don't like Baltimore? I said, nothing wrong with Baltimore. I just want to go to L.A. There's more opportunities there for me, you know. He said, but you leaving because of the murders? And he's six. You know, my son is not exposed to any danger, any mm-hmm. strife. I mean, I do the best I can do to make sure that his life is 1,000 times better than mine. He's never been in a poverty-stricken neighborhood, forced to anyway, to live, you know, in those conditions. I mean, like, you know, I know he watched me go to funerals and, you know, and he hear conversations, but I never knew where he got that from. So I got in the car, and I didn't want him to see me cry, so I just ended it. Because at that point, I felt like I failed my son. Like, now my son has PTSD. Now he's dealing with this same trauma that I tried to avoid, and I'm crying. I called my sister. I said,
did you have an ugly Jordan face?
No, because it was really like, it was similar to Jordan because it wasn't boo-hoo, but it was like, yeah. Man, I felt so disappointed, you know, and I'm like, okay, cool. So I called my sister. I said, you know, pack your stuff up. She said, what's wrong? She thought something happened to one of my kids because I was crying, you know. And she, you know, I don't call her crying. She, you know, it had to be something. I said, no, we got to move. She said, what happened? I said, we just got to go. Because, you know, a lot of people work hard, you know, to you don't work that hard to stay the same, but a lot of people can't afford to do certain things right now, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, you want to go to Charlotte, Atlanta, wherever y'all want, just get out of here, you know. And she's like, okay, cool, call Dell. All right, we can move. Just let me figure out, talk to Dell, and we're going to figure it out. I said, I'm going to call y'all back. So at that time, she had a condo in Owens Mills I was using until I moved. Because, you know, so I go out of the house, I'm laying down, and I always look at motivational videos, you know, whether it be from Mike Tyson, whoever. I like to learn from winners, right? So I'm watching this video pop up on YouTube from my phone from Joel Osteen and what's the other preacher that got a daughter that's preaching to?
T.D. Jakes.
T.D. Jakes. They got this collaboration on this motivation video, say, You the One. It's popped up on the phone. And I'm listening to it, and it was so motivational. So I'm like, dang, what is God trying to tell me, you know? And so that night, it's 8 o'clock, but it's 5 o'clock L.A. time. So I call Jay. But Jay don't have, I can't call him on the phone, I call Henry, but they right there together. And I'm like, man, what do y'all think if I stay in Baltimore a little longer? Because they had already made it conducive to my transition, to move out of LA, office in Rock Nation, whatever I wanted was there. Because we had already did a partnership together to help me manage Skies.
Yeah.
So
he's under Rock Nation.
Yeah, we was under Rock Nation. Okay. We had a contract with Rock Nation to help manage him because I know he was getting too big for me to do him a disservice. I needed help.
Yeah.
I needed reinforcement.
Right? Right.
So, and matter of fact, one of the best businesses ever made. So I call them, they like, man, listen, you can leave Baltimore right now and be miserable, or you can stay and lead. We're going to support you, whatever you want to do. So I said, lead? They said, yeah, man, you know, whatever you know, you got to do to get the city right, because, you know, they love you. If you leave, you take a hope with you. Now might not be the time just to leave. So I called my family, you know, and you know, I'm looking at another year approaching 300 murders. I'm looking at, you know, all my friends that's like, man, we need to do something. Everybody called me. The mayor called me. Police called me. Everybody called me. I'm like, well.
It is funny because when they be having everything in the city, they'll call you
right,
to come to the thing.
Right. To, you know, to wherever they got. Like, man, no. What can we do to stop the bleeding? But what can we do simultaneously to create hope? And I tell people all the time, being from Baltimore, we don't have a Roland Park problem. Federal Hill, Canton, you know. We don't have a problem in those areas. We got an inner city problem. And, you know, again, most of the candidates that I love and respect and adore that's running for office, they're not from that particular element. And I'm not saying they can't understand it, but I don't think you can fix anything unless you know how it works. You might be lucky sometimes, but right now I tell people all the time, you know, and as smart as this lady is, you know, and as handsome as you is, if your leg broke, you ain't calling me. You just ain't gonna call me. Her car break down, she ain't calling me. She might say for a ride, but she ain't gonna say fix me. She ain't gonna ask me to fix her car.
Yeah.
And you might like to talk to my man, you know, we chill, but you ain't gonna ask me to fix your leg. You just ain't gonna do that. You gonna go to a doctor.
Yeah.
But right now we have a city that's on Lifeline and we're asking people to do different things to fix it. And it's not gonna happen. And I'm real being honest and transparent, and I'm hopeful that, you know, we will elect a leader who can move Baltimore forward. But based on previous experience and what I see. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have people, man, who are going to dislike the premise of change and not want people to move forward because they stuck where they are and they haven't had any type of economic opportunities. You know, they don't think nothing's going to change. But if we don't get a leader that these young folk can trust, respect, you know, and identify with, you're going to have problems like you never seen before. And as I said yesterday, it's starting to be more of a pandemic than an epidemic, because now it's younger and younger and younger. And they're getting brave because of this so-called consent decree, and the police can't do their job effectively because they don't want to go to jail. And now you got criminals who are braver than they ever was before, because now no one yells time out. No one yells 5-0. Because they don't respect them.
About them. Yeah, the part that I find funny, Jan, I want you to really get into this. Is your space? The part I really find funny about this is that some of the other people will try to discredit you as a viable candidate for mayor, right?
Correct.
Because of, you know, your experience or your lack thereof of political management experience. However, when there's a political crisis in the urban community, you the one they call. When the riots came, or when it was like they called the Bloods and the Crips and they called Stokey and we all sit down, or when it was the, well, just whatever. I remember a few different things, like they're calling you. So the person that they think is unqualified to run a city is the person that they call when there's a crisis.
That's always the case. And, you know, that's why one of the preludes to this, you know, statement you made was, you know, you can't fix something unless you know how it works. I stand convicted that I didn't think Donald Trump would win. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a politician.
Right.
He was someone who had people that believed in him to mess things up. Yep. That's exactly what he did. He had people wanted to erase everything Obama did.
Right. And people that resonated with him, and I don't know how he did this, that were basically, you know, non-existent in other people's eyes, but he made them feel like they were important. He made them feel like he cared about their issues.
Exactly.
And that he could relate. And he absolutely couldn't relate to the people that he was.
Well, what happened was, as much as he had people show up, a lot of people didn't show up.
Right, exactly.
So what I'm saying is that, you know, Obama turned out a whole lot of people where Hillary Clinton didn't. Mm-hmm. And see, when people thought that Trump wasn't going to win, nobody took him serious. No one took his base serious. But people were showing you through the primary they wanted to change. Right? And fortunate enough for him, he was able to get people to vote.
Right.
Now, for me, based on the premise that you just elaborated on, they're not the ones I'm really concerned about. Because, you know, you got people who said that Hillary Clinton was going to win. She had more money, a bigger base, and so forth. And he murdered her with the Electoral College. She won a popular vote, but that don't matter if you don't win Electoral College. And if those who don't know what that means, Electoral College chooses who the president become. Right. By way of sections in America that, you know, have, you know, certain delegates and so forth, mm-hmm. right? But today in Baltimore, if you look at where we are going and who's involved and who's attached and who's, you know, making the decisions, most of everything we address in these town halls, it don't have anything to do with the wealthy people. Mm-hmm. They want better infrastructure, lower taxes, right? And, you know, they want development. But we want so much more. We 65% of the population. But we vote in the low, you know, 30% projectile, right?
Right. We still looking at what's basic for us, what they're looking at things, because the basic thing, if you look at, for instance, Maslow's hierarchy of needs,
right,
food, clothing, shelter, they're like, we got that. We going up the rung on Maslow, right?
Right.
But we're still looking for places to buy fresh fruit and vegetables in our community.
And they got food deserts,
right? Right. And where we don't have to go in a corner store and pay $3 for an egg, you know, so
like in 2015, you spoke about the riots. A lot of people don't know this, and I hope everybody in this room don't ever forget this. But Baltimore was part of history. And it wasn't part of history because we had an uprising. It was part of history because we were one of the only cities that had attachment to black leadership. Mm-hmm. We had a black president. We had a black attorney general. We had a black mayor. Mm-hmm. We had a black police commissioner. We had a black state's attorney. We had a black sheriff. We had a black city council president. Mm-hmm. The only thing we didn't have was a black governor, but we had a black lieutenant governor, right?
Right.
We committed more murders in Baltimore under black leadership than any other year other than 1993. And I'm saying to you, so sometimes not about complexion, it's about leadership. Mm-hmm. And most of those individuals that are in power in Baltimore, as he spoke about, I had on speed dial. In hindsight, 2020, but when you're dealing with a crisis, you need crisis management. You need somebody who have experience. I'm not bragging about my experiences, but I can go to any corner in Baltimore by myself and talk those guys into doing something different.
Can you talk them into voting?
That's what we're doing now. But the thing about it is you need resources. But the reason why that has become problematic for the most part prior to me getting involved because politicians had let people down over and over again and again. Chris gonna hold me accountable. I don't care what nobody say. If Allah blessed me with the opportunity to be mayor, I'm telling you. And he see me at, I don't go out, but he see me at clubs, select wherever you're taking a drink or down Harbor East. And Stoke, you ain't think it was beneficial to guys on Pittsburgh to get them a playground, but you gave guys down Fells Point a racing track. That don't make a difference. Nah, Chris, nah, come on, man. That ain't, I know he gonna hold me accountable. But you got certain individuals who we don't know what their plan is to hold them accountable. Because we vote for complexion and familiarity. I just know right now, based on statistics and experience, if these young folk out here right now do vote, that means they engage. And they engage, they can be able to hold people accountable if they don't vote, but it makes more sense. They know what they're voting for and who they're voting for. But I do everything I can do to keep them engaged, whether it be through music, art, entertainment, so forth. Because sometimes you got to speak to them through their own language. You got to meet them where they at. It's problematic right now that we don't have more people registered, but you can't really be mad at people because they've been let down year after year, election after election. We still got vacant houses in my community, and in my lifetime, I only had two Democratic presidents. The rest was Republican, but you can't just blame the Republicans and Democrats had a chance to fix, and they didn't. Right. So you got to look at the leadership as a whole, and I'm saying right now, a lot of these young kids out here today who I walk up to, they just want to vote because they know we're making it cool to vote. But I always ask them, do they know why? And try to let them go on the website to find out the things that we're talking about changing in the community that's for them, that's long-term, not just for election cycle. I'm talking about 20 years down the line, you know.
What do you see as priorities as a candidate for mayor? Like, what would be, you know?
Of course, first of all, it has to be crime. Okay. But people always talk about these individuals after they become criminals. So you can't. You know, you got to be proactive. I don't want to invest in criminals. I want to invest in people before they become criminals. So if you get them more resources, you get them affordable housing, you get them jobs, therefore they're going to try to be like me and Chris. They're going to want their work. But when you don't give nobody opportunity to be successful, they're going to find means wherever they are. And wherever they have scarce resources, you go ahead, crime, violence, and like right now, murder. That's nothing new.
Go ahead. Just one more question. Because I'm real curious about this as it relates. I mean, when I think about, you know, the drug epidemic and not only the using but the selling of drugs in our communities and how it's devastated our communities and the issues around people in general. I'm not going to say young people wanting to have enough money to live, right? And then maybe even more than just live. Just get by.
Right.
Like, then I think about like young people that don't have skills, and I'm not talking about going to college. Everybody's not going to go to college, but I'm talking about having a trade, having a legitimate skill that you can use in order to make money.
So one of my it's going to be a mandate because I'm gonna speak it into existence. So right now, statistically, right, 54% of people in our Maryland high school system graduate after ninth grade. 46% don't. 50% of that 54% go to college. So the other 50%, which are 270 people, just say if it's 270 people out of 100 who graduate but don't go to college, they end up joining the 46% of people who didn't. They become squeezy kids, criminals, or just hopeless individuals. So what I want to make come to fruition is a mandate to bring vocational training back to school. So in ninth grade, you got to be an engineer, you can be an electrician, a master barber, something. Whereas though, if you choose not to go to college, because college ain't for everybody.
Right, exactly.
You'll have something to fall back on. Now there ain't nothing to fall back on. It's either get a job doing something that you're not qualified or certified for, or try to find these means anywhere you can.
Yeah, and that was one thing, like the Squeegee Boys. You pulled them up and had...
Right.
And tried to organize them or have and galvanize them at some point too, didn't you?
Well, we have a very good relationship, you know, and I still do. They engage in a lot of volunteer initiatives, you know, within the campaign and just in general. But we have a very honest relationship because I know most of those kids are hopeless and desensitized and they've been displaced because of real issues in the household. They're choosing, squeezing over doing something illegal, well, something a little worse than, you know, wiping somebody's window down, right? You know, and, you know, unfortunately,
that's the least of what they could do.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, they say that's illegal to, you know, and, you know, but, you know, so is, you know, the guy, white guy with the sign that's begging for money.
On every corner.
On every corner, right?
Mm-hmm. At least they're attempting to work for it.
But they are trying to provide a service.
Mm-hmm. So, I want to go through a few sets of questions mm-hmm. to give you the opportunity to fight some of the things that people may say.
Right.
And I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on them. But I kind of want
to
say...
Not what they might say, what they've been saying.
Yeah, what they've been saying, yeah.
Right.
For like, hey, what do you say to this? This is kind of what I want to do, right? So, what do you say to the person that says, oh, he's for... He has that Bernie movement, which is good, right? But he's worried about the people who are impacted the most, which is all great, which is all fine and dandy. But what about the people... How... It's good to have... You're not just going to be the mayor for them.
Right.
You're going to need to be the mayor for the people in Federal Hill, the people that are developing in Harbor East, the people that are developing in Bolton Hill, and just wherever else. Yeah, you might have a good reach with those other people, but you don't have a reach with them, and you're not going to be able to get the job done.
Well, I don't know about a reach or relationship, but again, you said it so profoundly that you are the mayor of entire Baltimore City. But when we talk about problems, if you're fixing problems, you got to fix the problems where they are. So if you got someone in Federal Hill who don't have a problem, but they need resources, they worry about stimulating the economy, then I'm here for that as well. Because you got to partner with stakeholders, just like you got to partner with people who got problems, right? And the disconnect is uneducated people who have opinions. So if you look at my business resume and all my business endeavors, I got relationships with billionaires on speed dial. I can, you know, get in contact with a Jim Davis who owns New Balance, and we help reshape the culture of his company. I got a Jay-Z on speed dial who helped me not only create a successful management company, but also a career in marketing, you know, outside of retail. So these things are nothing new to me. You just got to get people who understand how this works. Baltimore City alone allocates $3.2 billion a year, you know, depending on, you know, how many people we have, right? And $500 million go to the police department. 13% of our budget go to education. It's simply just applying numbers, you know, and being fiscally responsible. But when you got a lot of people that are sitting back saying what you can do, I'm of the opinion that it can't get any worse than it is, but well, it can get worse than it really is, right? But you can't say, oh, okay, well, he'll do something that they haven't done before, right? Because you always can, you know, vote somebody out. And what I'm saying is y'all gave people a chance when y'all knew they weren't going to do right. But we do it anyway because it makes sense. You know, like O'Malley, he came in and had zero tolerance. The kids you see today right now are the parents that he locked up in 2005. So, you know, I'm saying to you is that he locked up 108,000 people. We only a city of 600,000. You do the math. And most of those people, if not 80, 90% of them, were minorities or black folk. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying to you is that I don't have a problem with addressing the needs of Baltimore as a whole, but you got to give people an opportunity. And I'm the first to tell you, I don't know everything. I'm going to make some mistakes.
So that's one of my next question. But you, me and you had a conversation. I'm like, well, Stokey, how are you planning to do this, bro? And you might not be the person in education and stuff like that.
Right.
So the question is, what do you say to those people that say, hey, how are you going to manage a government when there are intricacies of the government and focus that you're not skilled on or that you don't know?
And I mean, I always use analogies and parables. That's almost like asking Phil Jackson, how would he manage the Lakers? He got somebody who knew how to do a triangle offense. He brought somebody in. So you got to bring people in that knows what they know to help you not only, you know, bridge the divide, but fill these voids in government. That's their specialty. They hire accountants. You know, you just got to be a very trustworthy, fundamental leader. And I guarantee people will follow you. There's people from all walk of life who didn't know certain things. You know, a doctor has assistants for a reason. The judge has a clerk for a reason. Mm-hmm. So when you bring people in power and you give them opportunity to lead or govern, you make sure they got the proper tools, you know, and the equipment to lead. And the same way you got people right here now that's dysfunctional, that's doing things that don't make sense. What makes you think I can't find a young entrepreneur like somebody in this room and say, listen, this is the job we got to do. Let's do it.
I agree with you because, you know, in this our organization, we're over 200 staff deep. And people always ask me, like, well, how do you sleep at night? You have to do everything. I'm like, I don't have to do everything.
Right.
I hire strong individuals and we partner together and let them run their department. And then they brief me and then they make the recommendation and we make a decision based on that. Because a mayor, and it's just like no different than a president. Man. It's just a person that is the CEO of that corporation, but they're not the person that's doing each job. It's not every single policy that right. they come up with. Other people are responsible for that. What would you say to the person that say, how is he going to lead a city when he had a problem leading his own family with his child being arrested?
Well, I never had a problem leading my own family. My son a grown man, you know, just like Biden's son a grown man, you right. know, and he over in Ukraine. I can't control what he do as a grown man, but what I will say in his defense, he live in a city where 300 plus people get murdered every single year, and he possessed a firearm for his safety when he had no criminal background. The mistake he made was not getting that gun legal. That's the only mistake he made. If he didn't got the gun registered, we wouldn't be talking about this. He wasn't robbing nobody. He didn't shoot at nobody. He didn't kill nobody. He was in the possession of a firearm without a permit, which is legal in Baltimore. And he went to jail for that. So therefore, if maybe the homicide rate wouldn't be what it is, a lot of individuals wouldn't be carrying firearms. Now, do I rather for my son to be judged by 12 or carried by 6? Absolutely. Because I told you last night, I'm really going through it emotionally about the loss of a 13-year-old kid life because of someone with a firearm. And it's also based on people's intentions. So it's not about me running. Okay, that's almost like saying my mother died of AIDS. I can't tell her not to get high. That's this ignorance on top of ignorance. You know, you got to use your personal experience, you know, to resolve or solve every issue you face in life. And I'm not to say that my son is perfect. I'm just saying I understand the same way other folk in politics, family members make decisions or poor decisions or lack of, you know. So it's not about what my son did, you know. It's about what I want your son to do.
And about changing the narrative. The culture that allows for him not to have to carry firearms and stuff
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. You know, because, I mean, you think about it like this, man. You know, I could say there are guys that are no longer here who wish they had firearms on them, right, to save their life. But we live in a culture in the city right now that has been so negatively affected by crime and violence that we normalize it. And I want to change the culture so these young folk won't have to feel like their life is at danger, because they're going to be doing something positive, and they'll create hope where there's hopelessness and find ways to, you know, give them something else to think about. But that's all about the culture.
I have one last what would you say question, and I'm going to let Jan go through a few more questions okay. and we'll conclude it off. What would you say to people who think they would say that he's not a viable candidate because you have these other people raising tons of money and, you know, it costs money to run a campaign?
Well, I think even when you look at polling.
No, you're missing it. You're supposed to say I would tell them to donate.
I would. But I mean, you know, what's for me is for me. But, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, I would give you a hint. I would say this. If you match bank accounts to all those other guys, this wouldn't be close. If you match what I do to what they do in their individual capacity, the race would be over by now, right? But that's not how it goes, because I'm not a politician. So when you look at politicians, most of their funds come from people who don't necessarily support their agenda, you know, versus supporting them for something that they could do. Most, if not all, of my funds come from grassroots organizations. I'm talking about family members, $2.25 donation. And I don't want to take from the poor. That was deliberate. I don't, you know, things have changed. I don't need to try to raise a lot of money to tell lies. I've been doing most of the work anyway. So with a little bit of money I raise, because I don't want to go knocking on poor people's door saying, give me your hard-earned money to get my message across. So therefore, I can use technology, I can use resources and relationship to do the same exact thing, and we can perpetuate the same amount of people as they can. It's just that we got to get our people to vote. And I'm going to tell you, you're right. I wish there were more people that had money, but they don't. And I'm okay with that. We raised enough money to stay in this race since June. I ain't been, you know, you ain't seen me had to sell no TV. You know, you ain't seen me had to default and start pawning nobody's wedding ring, right? We good. However, you know, I'm only supposed to be in this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying right now, we doing very well according to the statistics. Whether we at the 1% or the no percent, like, we are a viable candidate because the people chose. If the people decide on April 16th through the 28th that they want you, I'm okay with that. I just got to make some personal decisions for me, what I want to do as far as being a citizen of Baltimore. Because I can afford to leave. I can afford to move. 88% can't. So they got to deal with the results of whoever they're going to put in control of their lives, and they got to ask themselves who's best to lead their kid in the right direction, who their kids relate to, because they're the ones going to hurt the earth. Me and you ain't nothing to worry about. We don't need an education. We don't need a rec center. So it ain't about us, really. It's about our kids. And then when you find people who think that way, you know, you, and you got a lot of other individuals on here who I raise more money than. You understand, most of these people be on TV all day long. You got seasoned politicians, right? And most of them, except for me, has been a part of the paradigm. You know, or working for the police department. T.J. Smith is one of my great friends. He's a spokesman. He on TV every day. You know, Sheila Dixon was a former mayor. You know, Brandon is the city council president. TV Jack Dillon is the mayor. Mary Washington is a senator. These people have been on TV all the time. But I'm asking you, why should it even be a conversation? They're supposed to raise more money. They know more people that invest in politics. My family, my friends don't really have money to invest. And when you look at where that money comes from, let's ask that question. Where does the money come from the people that are supporting these candidates? You know, is it coming from the mom
people
and
that
pop?
Actually care, or yeah, people that yeah, want to
exactly.
be broken into
so,
a deal.
So, you know, I'm okay with that. But like I say, you know, I mean, it's been a wonderful experience. Because, again, you didn't ask me why I decided. I don't know, some kind of way that question got. 80% of the reason why I wanted to get into this race wasn't
it
becoming.
It was my question. I just right. hadn't gotten it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll let you go. I almost steal it. I ain't going to steal
right
your
now,
shine.
Jack.
No, no, no. And I even had a great setup for it.
Okay. Go ahead. Bring
well.
It. Let us
okay.
see.
Yeah,
let us see.
Let me hear the setup.
Let us see you do it.
Okay. So my setup is that one of the people on my wall, Michelle Obama, I read her book, Becoming, and there's been some talk. People have said, wow, Michelle Obama would make a great vice president.
Right.
I'm thinking to myself, they haven't read Becoming. Michelle Obama doesn't want to be the vice president. She didn't want to really be the first lady.
Right.
Like Barack had to really talk her into that. And then he had to make a promise that, okay, if I go along with this, this is your last time running for public office, okay? And that was the promise he made to her, and she was supportive. Like, you know, wives do. We, you know, we support our husbands.
That sounds like an alter. That doesn't okay. sound overly
no,
supportive.
No.
That
no,
sounds
we,
conditional.
No. No. She didn't ask for a private island or anything. She was just like, promise you won't do this to us again.
Gotcha.
And so I'm thinking, Michelle would never do that. And then I think about myself. People have asked me about running for public office, and I'm thinking, like, that is a lot of, not necessarily work, but it's just a space that is so thankless sometimes, most of the time, I think. And so when you think about public, being a public servant, because right. that's really what it an is. Elected official is, and people forget that they are really servants, right? They want people to serve them opposed to them serving people. Other people. When you think about it in those terms, being a public servant, what would make Stokey, and you just laid it out, you have the resources to and the connections and the colleagues and friends to do almost anything you would want to do and to not really be in Baltimore. You could live anywhere you wanted to live. What would make you want to be the mayor of Baltimore City?
I see why we waited for that wild question. That was very well done.
Right.
Thank you. I learned from the best.
Right. Being very honest and transparent, I told you it had a lot to do with my son. But more importantly, when you look at the many lives we lost, they got names. And to his point, being the mayor for entire Baltimore, reshaping the paradigm, going against the establishment, knowing that most, if not all, the other individuals want the job for different reasons other than myself. I don't need the job. And I feel like I know what change looks like. And every day I see it, it motivates me to want to do more. The platform in itself will give me the ammunition to help people who have been ignored and denied.
Mm-hmm.
And being a community leader or advocate, you still got to constantly ask and ask and ask for permission to do these type of things. And regardless of what happens, right, 80% of the reason was to give people hope. So they can see that they can still become anything they want to be. And if I get one vote, right, I'm good, and if I change one life, I'm good. Because at the end of the day, I can promise you this, right? On April 29th, right, I'm not going to be at Chris' door asking Chris to loan me nothing, right? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. This is the day after my birthday.
Right.
So, the day after my birthday, so I might not have it.
So, right. So, and I mean that, but again, as I said earlier, you know, this is the happiest, most successful, healthiest ever been in my life, and I'm here for it, and what God got for me is for me. But we need to change, and I think the only way we can change is do something different. And if you want the same thing, it's okay. Like, fine. Like, I can't make people, you know, vote for me. I want them to vote, period. But they choose, that's fine. But look at the conditional candidates that are running for office and ask yourself, most of those individuals been here before. What changed? Like, do you really think that these young folk are really going to wake up one morning and say, you know what, I want to be like somebody I see on TV who hasn't been through what I've been through, so why would I change? And all those who, everybody has hardships, but I mean, again, as I said earlier, the rest of the Baltimore's went about the problematic part. They want somebody to fix that.
Right.
They saying, we cool over here, just don't contaminate this, right? Mm-hmm. So they want somebody to make sure that these kids are doing well in school, have affordable housing, I mean, you know, fix the infrastructure in the inner city, bring back some hope. These kids are normalizing crime and violence because that's all they see. And you can't fix nothing unless you know how it works. And I would love to be doing something. I promise you. So every now and then I look out my window and I'm like, man, what the hell was you thinking about? Because you're only depriving yourself of financial opportunities, but time away from my child, traveling. I love traveling, but, you know.
You feel this is your purpose right now?
Because my purpose is giving back, helping people.
Yeah. Right.
So somebody said, well, you could have been city council, you know, probably could have been easy shooting. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about 17, that's my area. You talking about you get 5,000 votes. But that ain't going to make these kids understand what the fight is about.
You want to have a larger impact.
And that's it. And at the end of the day, you know, I always tell people, you know, be careful for what they ask for.
That's
because,
right.
You know, sometimes it's not what we want, it's what God wants. And I'm saying, you know, whether my purpose is bigger than, if God says, Stoke, listen, man, I want you and Chris to take this opportunity to get the biggest, most profitable mental health center in the world. We're going to make y'all headquarters in London. Y'all going to be responsible for 400 across the country and salary is $200 million a year.
Right.
He got to make a decision if he want to leave his son or take him with him to make that money. But at that time, that's an opportunity that was put in front of him. But at the end of the day, we got to do what makes us happy. You know, and I'm happy knowing that I gave my all, I laid on the line. I'm not worried about what nobody said I did 30 years ago. Like, I did that. I saw that. I paid for that.
People going to always keep reminding you. That's the trick of the enemy.
But to be honest with you, though, this is the thing. He said it best. They wouldn't be calling me if I didn't go through that.
Right.
They wouldn't be asking me for help if I didn't go through that. And I wouldn't be who I am today if I didn't go through that. If I went to Harvard or Yale, my people probably wouldn't even want me to represent them. Mm-hmm. And neither would they. Because I can't relate to what's going on.
Right.
Not saying that education is, you know, dismal or something negative, but it's all about relationship and people wanting someone they know come from them.
What I hear you saying that just resonates with me is that you could be doing whatever right now. You have other opportunities. It's clear, it's transparent, that you have a track record of it. However, this is what you feel is your calling right now, and you don't want to walk away from a city that without feeling like, not without, but you don't want to walk away from a city not knowing that you did your job in trying to help it. And your job in trying to help it is best seen right now, not in addition to all the other stuff that you've done before, but as to say, you know what? The way that you really fix this is being in a place of where the real control is, and that's in politics. And if I can get in there, I know I can do a great job. If I don't, I can sleep well knowing that when this kid get murdered, it's not on my hands at this point.
Right. I mean, because right now, I told you, right?
Knock on wood to somebody.
Yeah, and right now, it was a struggle getting here. I was coming no matter what, but it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, yesterday I had a meeting with this 11-year-old kid. I was telling Chris, and I thought the kid was a grown man, asking to have a meeting with me about entrepreneurship, photography, videography, and the like. And when he walked, I seen his mom. I thought she there to volunteer. And I didn't know who he was in the building. I'm like, okay. He said, your guest here. I'm like, where they at? He said, he right there. I said, where? I said, him? I said, you here to see me? He said, yeah. I'm Josh. I sent you a message on Instagram. You told me to come over with my mom. I said, Josh? Who, Josh?
The entrepreneur, Josh?
But no, he never said his name because Instagram, he said his name was 4K whatever.
Okay, got it.
I said, John, remember? He said, yeah, 4K. I said, that's you? He said, yeah. I said, well, come on in, man. I tell your mother come on in too, because now I need his mother permission to talk to a child. He said, man, so respectful, so engaged. Like, yeah, I wanted to meet with you, man. I DM a lot of people. They never hit me back. So I was surprised that you hit me back. Because they go by social status. When you go up with that thing called on Instagram, that blue thing, check, whatever.
Oh, check, yeah.
When you get that, they think that, and I don't know what that stuff is. I don't care about that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of kids do. So like, yo, you... People don't really respond to you, you know. I'm like, huh? I always respond to everybody. Mm-hmm. He like, yeah, I just want to tell you, man, I like what you're doing. I said, but why me? Why me? Like, it's not because I like what you're doing. I want to work with you guys. See you help people. I said, but you're 11. How you find me? You're 11 years old. He said, I just watch what you do. I know your son. I know this. Now. He said, I just want to let you help me. I want to work with you. I'm a videographer. And I want to get a chance. I said, wow. I said, man, you know, you got that. I said, you know, nothing else I can do is give you a chance and help you with your platform. He said, does nobody know who I am? You know, I said, man, I got you. I said, tomorrow, like, wake up, I'm going to post our picture and promote you. I got you. 15 minutes after I leave him, I get a call to go see a mother of a child that was murdered 13 years old. Mm. Now,
just the juxtaposition of that. Like,
So we don't understand that most of us in this room who's realistic has some form of Baltimore PTSD. Mm-hmm. Like, we hear crime, we don't get in the knot unless it's somebody that's real close to us. PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Right. Yeah. I'm saying, so like, if we see yellow tape or we watch, hear someone murdering, you know, hey, that's crazy. You tell Chris tell you somebody got killed. Okay, Chris, then what time power come on? And Chris like, about an hour.
Didn't I just say somebody got killed?
So somebody got killed? They're like, oh yeah, I mean, so the little kids, they like, yo got his wings. So I'm like, what that mean? He's like, man, he can fly out of here. You know, poor little, like, whoa. So now I'm realizing that these kids are not only traumatized, they desensitized. And now we got to find a way to meet him where he at. So now I'm going to this kid's house who's 13 years old. And as sad as it is for me to see his mom, because I can't empathize with that, mm-hmm. right? And I meet his dad. But then when I go outside, a lady comes out with a little kid. They want to take a picture. And I'm like, okay, who? Like, this is his friend. This is Ricky's little friend. So I'm looking at this little kid. Now, either he's just too strong or too numb to know what's going on. He's mm-hmm. telling me verbatim what happened the day before and all that, right? So I said to him, I said, man, you know, I said, I'm sad you got to go through this, man. You know, he said, I just got over something, man, you know. I don't know how I'm going to get through this, man, you know. I said, yeah, I said, man, but listen, I don't know about your father, man, but I'm going to be here for you. He said, don't worry about my father. He ain't real. I said, whoa.
You just unpacked a lot of stuff.
Right, right. We need a part two.
So I'm like, man, you know. Yeah. So now coming here, I'm crying. I'm like, yo, trying to get myself together. Because like I told you, I feel like that's my fault. The person who could have killed that kid could have been exposed to some conditions that we contaminated throughout this whole street culture. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like at the end of the day, you got like, yo, if you knew better, you'd done better. Now if I went to Harvard or Yale, maybe more of them would have went. So part of the reason why I'm doing this now, so they can see, listen, it is other options. And it's not about a win because I need somebody to vote me in and get a job. The biggest platform is to work for yourself, of course. Congratulations, right? But I'm saying right now, Baltimore needs a leader who can manage this crisis. And I don't think, in my honest opinion, that most of the people that are affected by the change in the city, because you spoke about the other people, but think about the majority of people that's affected by the crisis. You don't forget about the minority, but it got to make sense to fix the majority so the minority can be okay as well. It's going to trickle down.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just sad that we live in a time where these kids look at makeshift memorials and candlelights as hangouts, and they don't think they're going to live past a certain age.
Yeah. Well, they've been giving me the wrap-up sign for the last while, but I think Jan and myself were both captivated by the conversation and
very
all that
so.
You had to offer, and I was happy that people can get to see the side of you and that you had a opportunity to answer some of the questions and stuff that people have. But I do have just a few more questions to get people to know you just a little bit more, and it's called Rapid Fire. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, and you just pick one or the other, mm-hmm. right? Help get people get to know you. All right. So, Sharita's coming over with the Instagram, so I'm going to make sure I slow down and wait for her so that people can hear this. Are we good to go, Rita? All right, Stokey.
I'm
going
to try to.
Jan said she's going to try. You need me to wait like 5 more minutes?
No, I'm good.
All right.
Because I'm still trying to figure out what the blue sign is on the Instagram. I'm sure I don't have it.
All right. No. All right, so here we go, Stokey. You ready?
Ready.
Martin or Fresh Prince?
Martin.
Waffles or pancakes?
Waffles.
The CD era or the streaming era?
Streaming.
You gonna go streaming era?
Because you can get more music.
But the CD era, yo, when that CD used to come out, you used to have to go to the store.
Are you talking about selected music or the way it's played?
Not how this
just
works.
The era
just
of music.
Let him answer.
Just the era of music.
Oh, CD, of course, then.
Okay. All right. Best chicken box in Baltimore.
I don't eat meat.
Okay, well, Nike or New Balance?
New Balance.
Jay-Z or Nas?
Jay-Z.
Going out or chilling at home?
Chilling at home.
That is true. Because we went out one day, we went to the casino. I'm like, all right, let's grab a drink. He was like, I don't drink. I'm like, what? I'm like, you know I'm not with all that other stuff. I'm just, you keep it on with me. Big white tee or small or slim fitted clothes?
Slim fitted.
Stokey for mayor or someone else?
Stokey for mayor.
All right, that was it. How can people can't donate to your campaign or support it in any more capacity?
They can go online at stokeyforbmore.com and look at the website. It's a donation page there. And thank you, man, for your contribution, man, not only to me as a person, but, you know, to your vision. And one thing I like about you and this opportunity is that y'all giving people like myself a chance to bring his vision to fruition. Yeah. When I went to the Breakfast Club, I was telling them, man, you know, you got local radio stations that haven't invited people. And I'm not a person to hold grudges, but this has opened my eyes up in ways where as though I would have paid for a degree. And I'm telling you now because it's people who I would have gave scab to, right? Who haven't called me and said, man, do you need a flyer? And this ain't even about me. This is about Baltimore. And it's nothing to do with politics more than it is trying to understand which direction our city should go in, right? And for some reason, the stigma has contaminated Baltimore in a way where those that you think should or expect to support you, lose, win, or draw, whatever, just, you know, hasn't come. And I'm okay with that now because now, you know, you don't have to guess, you know.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I never asked nobody for nothing. Like, you know, yeah. This 9 months is probably the only time I ever asked somebody for anything. And it hurt me mm-hmm. to call somebody and say, yo, give me some money. That's not my nature.
Yeah.
And my team get mad at me for that. Like, yo, I don't know how to do that. Like, how you start calling and say, yeah, man, but it ain't for you. It's for your campaign. Call somebody and tell them you need donation. I'm like, okay, but I'd rather for y'all to do it. And I still struggle with that. As long mm-hmm. as we got the lights on, enough money to make sound, I'm okay with that. But I just don't know how to do that. You know, I know how to beg because I'm so used to giving. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You and have it, to think up not as begging, though.
I know, but this is how, you know, my mind works. You know, and I know it shouldn't be that way, but, you know, it has been reciprocated in from the right people. Let me say it that way. The people who really behind me has supported me 1,000,000%, and I'm okay with that. Those who I thought would be is still a thought, and I'm okay with that as well.
Okay.
And that's good that you say that, you know, and you know where people stand and you know what it is going forward. But like you said, it's not about you, it's about the mission. No. You know what I'm saying? So again, thank you for being here.
Oh yeah, but you asked me one question. You say StokeyForBaltimore.com, StokeyForBaltimore on IG, of course the Stokey Project on IG. Campaign office at 23 East North Avenue. They can come pick up flyers, signs. We have a meeting every Monday at 6 o'clock for volunteers to get involved in canvassing the city of Baltimore to help spread the message. You know, if anybody want to donate again, they can go to StokeyForBaltimore.com.
I don't live in the city, so I can't vote. But
that's the thing.
So you what I'm saying for you, that's what I said. You know, as somebody that's your friend, whatever resources and platform I have and ability I have, whatever you need, let me know how we can lend our work to you.
I got you.
I just want to also add that early voting is April 16th through the 23rd.
Yep.
And primary voting is April 28th.
Yep.
It's Chris's birthday. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday
to Chris
in advance.
It's also my oldest son's birthday, too.
The whole North Avenue. Hopefully, the whole North Avenue. I can see you now walking up. Because me and Chris always bump heads out of town. You know what I'm saying? But hopefully, this time we can bump heads on North Avenue, whereas though we blocked the whole North Avenue off from St. Paul on down to Howard Street. And they're like, what's going on? It's Chris' birthday, and Stokey just won.
Right, exactly. And please, 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 as we depart, the last thing I want to leave with you is how important it is to vote. Until next time. We appreciate you being a listener on BTST's podcast, meeting you where you are. And if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe on Podomatic or Apple Podcast app. Peace and blessings.